We bring the newsmakers to you here on the KUMA Coffee Hour, presented by the Pendleton Roundup and Happy Canyon on News Radio FM 96.5, 1290 KUMA.
My guest this morning is Umatilla County District Attorney Dan Primus. My conversation with him begins right after these words. Stay with us.
Hi, everybody. This is Anthony Lucia, your Pendleton Extreme Bulls Tour Finale announcer. The event that crowns the Extreme Bulls Tour champion will take place during the 114th Pendleton Roundup this September. The PRCA, the Pendleton Roundup, and Happy Canyon are excited to present the Extreme Bulls Tour Finale, presented by Coors Banquet and your local Coors distributor, Columbia Distributing, in the world-famous Happy Canyon Arena. The Extreme Bulls Tour Finale will be a two-day event with two rounds on the first day and a third long go, and a progressive round on the second day, crowning the event champion. The tour finale is slated September 9th and 10th this season. The winning bull riders from Albuquerque, New Mexico and Lewiston, Idaho will get their chance at the title and will feature the top 24 professional bull riders in the world inside the world-famous Happy Canyon Arena. Get your tickets now as they won't last long for this epic championship event that will crown the Extreme Bulls Tour champion. Buy tickets now at PendletonRoundup.com for the PRCA Extreme Bulls Tour Finale. On with the show and let her buck.
Let's get back to the KUMA Coffee Hour on News Radio FM 96.5, 1290 KUMA, presented by the Pendleton Roundup and Happy Canyon.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us on the KUMA Coffee Hour. My guest this morning is Dan Primus, Umatilla County District Attorney. Dan, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Dan, is progress being made on Umatilla County's plan as we move closer to recriminalizing narcotics like meth and fentanyl?
Yeah, we're making progress. I mean, we're all aware of the recriminalization that went through this last legislative session, and it'll take effect in September. The county's had the opportunity to sign up for the deflection program, which I think we talked a little bit about maybe the last time. Umatilla County was one of those counties that signed up and said that they wanted to participate in a deflection program, and with that comes some grant funding. We have received the preliminary funding for that, the first portion of it, and we're in the process of applying for the second half of that. Because the recriminalization begins in September, the process for applying for these grants is, it is on a fast track. And so we have been trying really hard to work as a group to try to come up with an appropriate deflection plan that would work and be sustainable within Umatilla County. So we had a symposium in May that was put on by the Oregon Attorney Association, Sheriff's Association, League of Oregon Cities, Chiefs of Police, and to kind of give an overall view of what these deflection programs would look like. And then we really started working as a group after that point in time. So we're going to have about 6 weeks to get together, sit down, and get it in. And we got to get it in by July 1st, which is just around the corner. Really, we have about 10 days before our grant is needs to be up and running. We've been meeting a couple times a week, and when I say we, it's myself and a coordinator, Mark Royal, former parole and probation community corrections director, as well as our LIPSIC coordinator, CCS, our provider, as well as, you know, our law enforcement agencies. We've been sitting down trying to see what it is that we could do with the resources that we have within our community. Been meeting a couple times a week. One of the things that we have out in Eastern Oregon is we have we work well with our partners. And what I mean by that is we work pretty closely with Morrow County and some of the other smaller counties. You know, it's the Umatilla-Morrow County major crime team. We do a lot of our law enforcement stuff in combination or connection with each other. So we have been working with Morrow County as well to see if we can't build some sort of a share resources and kind of build a bigger program. The resources are fairly limited with what we're getting through the grants. And so we wanted to see what we can do to build. And so we're going to be, ultimately, we'll be working with a handful of our smaller counties, but progress is being made towards a deflection program, and we're doing what we can to see what we can to stand something up that would work within our community.
And once the changes have happened, what kind of a strain will it put on your office?
You know, it's not going to put a significant strain, I do not believe. I mean, are we going to see an increased number of cases that are coming? I think, of course. I think anyone that is out and about within the community can see that that there are drugs within, you know, all of our communities. That was the reason for the change, right? That came as a result of the legislative change. And So we're going to see cases that come in. We provided our law enforcement officers with the additional tools to be able to make contact with these individuals. And I think that we're going to have some cases. But the idea with this deflection program, it's hopefully going to be some what has been referred to as an off-ramp from the criminal justice system. And hopefully what we're going to be able to do is connect these individuals with the treatment that they need. We know, obviously, that individuals that are suffering or that are in possession of controlled substances, more often than not, are suffering from an addiction issue, right? But addiction may not be the only cause of that, of their issue. Maybe is an issue with housing. Maybe it's an issue with mental health. Maybe it's an issue with suicidal ideations, whatever it might be. So the hope is that when these individuals are contacted by law enforcement, that they can be connected to treatment providers, what we're referring to as peer navigators, individuals with lived experiences, that they'll be able to connect them with the resources that they need, get them through an evaluation, determine what those triggers are, and what it is that we can do with those triggers to try to help make them be successful, right? Help them be successful as they want to be. You know, these are individuals and members within the community that are going to continue to be a part of our community. So what tools can we provide them so they can be productive members within the community? Get them kind of out of that hole that they've dug themselves into. Now, with that being said, we know that not everybody that is afforded an opportunity for the deflection program is going to take it up, maybe the first or the second, maybe down the road. And if they don't want to go through the deflection program, they're not successful through the deflection program, they're going to come right through the criminal justice system just as any other individual did in the past. And with that being said, there's where the strain will come on our office, but nothing more than what we're used to. And I also understand that, you know, just because we're going to be adding cases in regards to drugs, maybe we're going to be lowering cases on the other end. And what I mean by that is if we can get to these individuals with these low level quantity of narcotics, get them the treatment that they need, get them maybe the formal supervision that they need, get the kind of a thumb on them in a sense, is to kind of keep them pointed in the right direction, that with that, maybe it'll prevent some future criminal behavior down the road. Maybe if we get them the treatment they need, we don't have the theft cases down the road to pay for this addiction issue. Maybe we don't have the burglary type stuff because we've got the treatment that they needed at the front end, and we've kind of maybe prevented some other cases there. So I think right now where we're at is trying to make sure that we have the adequate resources in place, that we have the appropriate people and team put in place so that we can have an impact on these individuals. That's what the goal is, right? To have an impact and make change, and hopefully we're able to do that.
All right. Well, I appreciate that explanation. We're going to take our first break, come back, continue the conversation after this.
At McKay Creek Estates, they know that the best food comes from the heart. Their dining program, A Taste of Prestige, is crafted by their talented culinary teams and tailored to the nutritional needs of older adults. They use fresh ingredients and local flavors to prepare healthy, mouthwatering meals their residents love. It's one more way they help older adults celebrate life at every age. For more about dining at Prestige Senior Living, visit tasteofprestige.com. Again, that's tasteofprestige.com.
Did you know street trees are regulated in the city of Pendleton? Permits are required to plant trees, and only certain types of trees can be planted. Street trees must be maintained to keep roadsides visible and sidewalks walkable. If you fail to maintain your trees, you may even be cited by the Pendleton Police Department. You can find details about street tree requirements and report an unmaintained or dangerous tree on the city of Pendleton's website. Just search street trees.
For everyone out there with yard work on your to-do list and a lack of supplies to get down to it, Zimmerman & Company True Value has all the tools you need to get started. Here's Terry to tell you more.
Right now, we're selling lots of yard tools. We have a pretty extensive selection of yard tools, pretty much everything you need for trimming the grass, to trimming the bushes, to cleaning up afterwards with rakes and shovels and brooms, all that stuff.
Zimmerman & Company True Value, open 7 days a week on Main Street in downtown Pendleton.
A Pendleton original. It's the KUMA Coffee Hour on News Radio FM 96.5, 1290 KUMA. Presented by the Pendleton Roundup and Happy Canyon.
Speaking this morning with Umatilla County District Attorney Dan Primus. And Dan, how is staffing?
Loaded question. I would say it's dire. I mean, not to speak bluntly, but I think it's good for the community to know we're struggling, and it's struggling just to get professionals. And I know that I get asked this question frequently, and I know I've been asked on the radio, and I, you know, you hate to be negative or sound negative in any form, but I think it's also nice to just be real, right, about the situation. And it's tough. We're working at half capacity, in essence. You know, when you're down 4 to 5 attorneys, you know, when you're a 10 attorney office, that can be tough, and it can be a drain. It can be, and it can really, put a lot of pressure on the individuals that you do have. And you hope you're not at the point where you're going to be burning people out. But you know, it's tough, because we, you know, when I took on this career, 15 plus years ago now, you know, the goal is to be able to work within the community that did so much for you, right? It's to work on behalf of victims and victims of crime, to help keep your community safe. And, you know, it's a tough pill to swallow when, you know, there's only so much that you can do, you know, and you hear that from individuals. There's only so much you can do, but there's so much more that could be done. And that's the hard part for me. But, you know, I would tell you that the staffing that I do have within the office is special. I mean, we're a good group, and I'm not just talking the attorneys, I'm talking staffing from top to bottom. It's a really special office. It's a place that, you know, I love to go to work. As difficult as this job is, as hard as this job is, you know, the people that you're doing it with makes it a whole lot better. But, you know, I really do appreciate this county. The county does a good job of trying to help and assist and do what it can. But, you know, everyone's struggling to try to find individuals and to fill positions. You know, when you look at EOCI and you hear them talk about their staffing levels, that they could use 65 additional officers or 85 additional officers, and the strain that they're putting on their staff. I mean, it's real. And so thinking about your staff and their well-being and their wellness is something that you've got to take into effect. And, you know, the part about staffing and being low, and you know, we're down on the number of cases that we filed because of it. And, you know, you never want to get to a place where you're only filing on certain types of cases because and or prioritizing, but that's what you have to do. And, you know, try to do the best we can, try to be as responsive as we can, and try to do what best we can to keep, you know, the community safe. But, you know, trying to get creative, trying to find ways to get individuals in this office. Hopefully we're going to be able to add to that. And that would be a really blessing on everyone.
And are there any major criminal cases coming up for hearings or trials in the coming months you want to share with us?
Yeah, I mean, we're constantly working on major cases. You know, I believe, are setting the manslaughter trial with Emerald Williams out of Milton Freewater. I believe that we've got a trial coming up here in the fall on that. That was the homicide from the Red Tea Garden. So we'll have a trial set in the fall. And I can't remember the date offhand. I apologize. We still have the Cragen trial set for early next spring in March. We've been doing motion practice on Alexander Moore most recently. And so some of those rulings coming out from the court will dictate, you know, some further investigations or discovery that will come. And then I think at that point, we'll start looking at potential settlement negotiations or getting a trial set. So those are kind of the three major cases that, you know, at the forefront right now that we're dealing with that are kind of time sensitive.
You serve on the DUII Victim Impact Panel. What does that organization do?
Yeah, and you know, that's something that our office does. It's run by our Victim Advocate Office, and it's a program that is required to for individuals that are convicted of a DUII. It's a panel that is put on. We put it on quarterly, so 4 times a year here at the Vert Auditorium. We bring in individuals from law enforcement or from the medical field, individuals that have lived experiences with DUII that have served time, or individuals that have been impacted, and most importantly, individuals that have been impacted as a result of somebody that has committed a DUII. And so individuals that are convicted are required to go through this program and hopefully see what the decisions that they make, the impacts that it can have. And so it's something that yes, in fact, my office runs, but the credit really goes to my victims department. They're the ones that run this and get this going and provide this service to our county.
And what was the feedback following this year's George Murdoch Eastern Oregon Regional Child Abuse Conference?
It was significant. I mean, I think people really loved it, and I think that it's a real testament to the work that went into it from our office. And I mean anyone can put a conference together, and we've all been to a conference where you show up and it was okay, you know, and I got my credited hours and I can sign off and check that box and meet it, right? Anyone that has to do continuing education will say they've been to those conferences. That's not what this one was. You know, when you hear individuals give you the feedback that every single presenter that presented, I got something out of. That is what we want, right? And so when Ms. Jenkins and Ms. Reddington are out there looking for and seeking the right individuals to come in and speak, I mean, these are individuals that we believe are going to have an impact on the career that in law enforcement or as a prosecutor of what you're doing day in and day out. And it may be impact your, you know, the type of investigation that you do or the work that you're doing on it, or as I talked to earlier about the well-being of the individual themselves that's doing a very, very tough job. And so I think it was well received. It was well received by our local law enforcement and our local prosecutors. But it was very, I mean, it was really nice for me when I went to an Oregon District Attorney's Association meeting in Salem and hearing from a child advocacy center individuals commenting on the service that we provided. How there was a gap as a result of the Clackamas County Summit going down during COVID, and how we have filled that. And, you know, they really want to try to bring that Clackamas County Child Abuse Conference back, but they don't want to do it and disrupt what it is that we've done because we've built something that is pretty special. And I think it's when you hear that at a state level, I think it really says something for what it is that what we have built. And so, you know, the feedback was great. Feedback is very important because we're not doing this conference just to do a conference. Right? We, like I said before, we're short-staffed. We have a lot to do. We're doing this to better the work that it is that we do, help improve our community. And so when you get the feedback from the officers, from the prosecutors about what worked, what didn't work, what I would like to see, that's very helpful as we go to build, because you start building it now. You don't build it just a few months before. It's kind of the process is ever going. As soon as the one is done, you start building on the next. And so where are the next speakers coming from? You know, and we are going to, you know, potentially attend some other conferences around the country to determine, you know, good speakers, try to find good speakers to bring in and continue to try to build and put on the best program that we can and hope to improve upon it each year. I think we were able to do that this year, and hopefully next year continue to improve and make it even better.
And speaking of next year, I imagine you're already planning for it, right?
Absolutely. We're planning now. Like I said, we're going to continue to look for the right speakers. And not only that, it's what is the issue? What is the topic? What are the topics? What is the area that we need to hit? And then from there, trying to find the speakers to kind of fill that. So I think that we had some great speakers this last go around. We may see one or two of them come back, which I think would be fantastic. But, you know, they're... again, we're continuing to build, we'll build, and hopefully put on even a better conference next year.
How did the conference earn its name?
It's named, I mean, we wanted this to be really, this is the Child Abuse Summit, right? We want this to be a child abuse conference and a child abuse summit. It is specifically in April because it is around child abuse awareness. When I say we do this for the kids, right? We do this for victims, the job. When I say that I'm talking about law enforcement, prosecution, those that are in child advocacy, you know, we do this to work on behalf of victims, and we wanted to do it that month. You know, we George Murdoch is at the front of that because, you know, he assisted with helping get this program up and running. It takes a lot. It costs a lot. He was, you know, he worked with our commissioners. Our commissioners were very generous to kind of give us kind of the startup funding to do it. I'm proud to say that we still have a lot of that startup funding, because we want to make it sustainable. But we've, in the same process or in the same breath doing that, we haven't charged an amount that what other conferences would charge, because we want to make sure that it is accessible to those in Eastern Oregon, right? We don't want to price our law enforcement partners out. We want to be able to provide them a service. So that's kind of a balance that we're trying to do. But, you know, that's where it comes from. You know, this is child abuse that we want to talk about. Don't want to talk about this child abuse that we have to talk about to help us, you know, be able to do what we need to do. But I think it's really important to memorialize an individual that really helped us get it started and off the ground.
All right. Thank you for that. We're going to come back and continue the conversation after this.
Miss a KUMA coffee hour? Download the podcast. Go to elkhornmediagroup.com. Live and local, it's the KUMA coffee hour on News Radio FM 96.5, 1290 KUMA.
Your Walla Walla Regional Airport can help you with bucket list travel destinations. Alaska Airlines provides 101 one-stop destinations from Walla Walla. Discover Charleston's Charm or Albuquerque's Balloon Fiesta. You will find these incredible destinations on alaskaair.com. In between your travels, our airport district has lots to offer, including wineries, breweries, distilleries, cafes, and retail. Book your tickets today at alaskaair.com and fly Walla Walla, where parking is always free.
The best happy hour is at the beautiful and historic Hamley Saloon. From 3 to 5 p.m., enjoy happy hour with appetizers and drink specials on beer, wine, and cocktails. Appetizers are perfect for sharing and include Nathan's mini corn dogs, Lester fries, sweet potato fries, beef sliders, chicken quesadillas, and more. Stay for dinner and try their delicious homemade soups made fresh every day. Don't miss happy hour from 3 to 5 at Hamley Saloon, corner of Main and Court, Pendleton.
Letterbus can get you anywhere in the city to summer fun like the Aquatic Center, Splash Pad, and Park. Check out the Letterbus Transit schedule at pendletonor.gov/transit. That's pendletonor.gov/transit to check out the bus schedule and download the app. The Letterbus schedule is available Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. The bus is free to ride. Come enjoy a cool ride to your summer destinations. Come ride the bus.
Live and local, it's the KUMA Coffee Hour on News Radio FM 96.5, 1290 KUMA. Presented by the Pendleton Roundup and Happy Canyon.
Finishing my conversation this morning with Umatilla County District Attorney Dan Premis, and anybody who has listened to this program knows, Dan, you're a huge advocate for softball and baseball, and there's a state champion softball player in your house. What was that like in the Premis household?
It was pretty thrilling, you know. It's pretty awesome, you know. My daughter Kels is she's a freshman. She was lucky enough to be able to get to play varsity softball this year, and you know, she was a role player for them. She was not a starter, but to be a part of a team such as that was a great opportunity and a great experience. You know, some people say once in a lifetime. We hope it's not. We hope it's four times in a lifetime is the hope. And for her, because that experience was phenomenal, and it was phenomenal from top down. Coach Carey and his staff are amazing. I mean, 4A Coach of the Year, Coach of the Year. I believe a fifth title. I mean, it's pretty outstanding what he's been able to accomplish. But the girls themselves, those girls were amazing, and it was amazing to see, because they are a team, you know, and it takes a team to be able to win something like that, not an individual. And that was the part that was really great. And to see them work and accomplish a goal that they set out early was great. To see my daughter on the field, out there running the bases, nerve-wracking as a parent. I know she was nervous as the out there as a freshman, but it was a great opportunity, a great experience, a great learning opportunity, and really kind of give you that measure of what it takes to get somewhere, and really set the goal for her for next year to be able to, you know, get back there again with her team, because it was just such a great opportunity, a great honor. She was just very happy and pleased to be a part of it and to be welcomed in by such a great group of girls.
Well, congratulations indeed to all of them. And Dan, give some advice to parents of younger kids about the value of sports to children.
Yeah, you know, sports plays a significant role in our family. And as a manager, sports plays a significant role for me as well, because I think that what sports does to a kid is it teaches them what it takes to succeed, what it feels like to fail. And then in addition to that, what it takes to overcome some of that failure. You know, not every team has a superstar. You know, every team needs role players. You know, every individual is going to see success and going to see failure. And it's going to show an individual, you know, what it takes to compete, You know, my son's down right now. He's at football camp at Western Oregon with our football team, and right, you know, he's quarterback. He's going to be a senior leader, but he hasn't always been that. You know, he's been a role player, and so he's been a role player for the last couple of years. Now he's a leader. So what does it take to be a leader? And that is going to translate well for him when he goes into whatever profession it is, right? To understand what it took to play his role, what it took to lead, and to set an example. And I think that's what sports does. It shows an individual, you know, how to compete, how to be successful. You know, I tell people all the time, you know, in all the sports that I've coached, you know, I'm not raising these kids to be professional athletes. They're not going to be. I don't believe, you know, my kids will not, but they're going to be professionals, right? And sports are going to teach them how to be professionals. It's no different than last night in the cage with my daughter hitting and pitching because she wants to push and you know, that little bit extra here and there, or the same with my son. And it's just, it's fun to see a goal be set to try to achieve. And, you know, it just brings so much joy as well, and team camaraderie. You know, I talked about just a little bit ago what my staffing level or my staff is like, and what a great staff and a great team it is. You know, that's the same. That's what it's going to be like in life. So learning how what it's like to work in a team, work in a team setting, is, I think, so valuable. And it's something as a manager, when I look through resumes and when they come through, you know, I look and I'm like, this individual was a high school wrestler. He traveled, to Fargo for, and I'm thinking to myself, man, what this individual has put himself through, in such a brutal, tough sport, both physically, mentally. This is an individual that I want in my office because I know I know what this individual can handle, right? I know what they've gone through. I know what they've been through. And so I think that sports can help build those things and build character. So that's what that's where I think, you know, where the value in sports comes from.
Well, and the other thing I'd like to just add is, you know, regardless of what you do in life, you know, I don't expect everybody out there listening this morning, you know, to work in the district attorney's office, but it's important to get out and, you know, be engaged in physical activity. I'm not expecting everybody to go out and, you know, hit a softball or, you know, catch a football, but it's just important to be engaged and stay active. I mean, technology and society is so, I guess, the opportunity of not being active and finding other distractions, it's just so easy to do that. But if you're a parent and you have young kids, you know, staying active and staying involved and everything, it just helps your, as you said, it builds character. It just helps you stay sharp and not, you know, get your mind off of the other things of life.
Absolutely. You know, and that's one of the things we talk about in our office as well, is, you know, your well-being, right? The mental health, especially when you go through it and you have a difficult job or a difficult career, making sure that you have those outlets that can help you de-stress or, you know, decompress from a tough day. If it's exercise, if it's just getting out for a walk, if it's, you know, whatever that might be. So constantly trying to find those things to help an individual with their mental health and their well-being. So very, very important. But I think sports plays a significant role in that because it teaches a lot about life.
All right. Umatilla Lake County District Attorney Dan Primus, thank you for your time. And that's going to do it for this edition of the KUMA Coffee Hour. We'll be back again on Monday. Everybody have a great weekend.
On us for local news, sports, and weather. News Radio FM 96.5, 1290 KUMA, Pendleton.